So this is the time for a short Dhamma sermon. Actually, we were discussing Anapanasati Sutta, which is available in Majjhima Nikaya. And as I said, this is a beautiful sutta where Buddha preaching Dhamma for many monks, not just for one monk, but the large amount of full gathering of monks. And among them, there are senior arahants as well as junior monks who are, in a way, novices to the sasana. And Buddha at that time understood that they were practicing diligently. And again, they were practicing different methods. As you know, Buddha has taught many different meditation techniques. And many were practicing many different meditation techniques. But then he wanted to give a sort of a common technique which is suitable for most of them, all of them. And as a result, he guided them in Anapanasati, mindfulness on breathing. And they are, as you know, probably might have heard, Anapanasati is actually capable of taking us towards the Samatha side, that is the concentration part, and as well as towards the Vipassana side. In this sutta, actually, Buddha mentioned more towards the Vipassana because he mentioned that Anapanasati Bhikkave Bhavita Bahuli Kata Mahapalahoti Mahanisansa. Monks, this Anapanasati, mindfulness on breathing, if one practice, gives many benefits and more sublime benefits. And he actually comes up with a strategy and how to develop Anapanasati in order to fulfill all four types of Satipatthana. As you probably have heard, Satipatthana Sutta also has a section on Anapanasati that is in the Kayanupassana section. It is in a way one method of meditation included in Kayanupassana. And it is not available in Vedanupassana, it is not available in Chittanupassana, and it is not available in Dhammanupassana. But in this sutta, Buddha actually comes up with the 16 steps where how to tackle or how to deal with Kayanupassana, how to deal with Vedanupassana, how to deal with Chittanupassana, and how to deal with Dhammanupassana while keeping Anapanasati as the main primary object. So, as we discussed last time, probably Suranga can show the steps. We were actually extracted certain parts from the sutta. And are you ready, Suranga? Is it if it is possible, you can show the first section, the Anapanasati Sutta, the first four. Actually, it's difficult to see. Okay. The first Kayanupassana section has four steps. That is just being aware of in-breath and the out-breath. And there are Sato Vasasati, Sato Pasasati is actually not included in the 16 steps. It is a mere attention, kind of a just a bare attention on breath. That is how we start our practice. Just keeping Anapanasati as our meditation object and keeping our attention on it again and again so that our mindfulness starts developed or established. Once it is established, we are going to the first section, that is breathing in long and breathing out long. So this is something we are recognizing. It is not that we are purposely breathing in long or breathing out long, but we recognize when breathing in happens, is it long or is it short? Actually, the second is the short. So we are recognizing whether it is longer or shorter comparatively. Previously, suppose you have experienced a breath. At the beginning, you understood it spent a long time. Long time in the sense, say a couple of seconds. Suppose it lasted for 10 seconds. And Now, if it is lasted only for 5 seconds, so comparatively you can understand the present breath was short or present in breath is short. Similarly, the out breath, previous out breath, if it is, it was long, assume it was 10 seconds, and now this one has completed within 5 seconds, then you can understand the present breath, present out breath is shorter. So you are now recognizing these subtle aspects of the breath, and this leads to further refinement of mindfulness. And actually we are getting, we are stepping onto the sampajanya, what we call as clear comprehension. You know, the breath itself is a very subtle object, very refined object. So in order for someone to recognize these very fine details, so his mindfulness has to be very sharp. So then Buddha is taking us to the third step, that is experiencing the whole body of breath. Sambhakaya patisangvedi asasissamiti sikkhati. Where one can understand the whole in-breath and whole out-breath. It is like a Gaussian curve where you are starting with a very fine level and then it is increasing, and then you are reaching the middle, and ultimately it is fading away. So there is a beginning, very subtle, gradual beginning, and then it is increasing. That is the middle. And then we are coming to the end, and then ultimately it disappears. So beginning, middle, and the end of the in-breath. And there's a slight gap at the end of that. And then there's a beginning of the out-breath, that also very similar. Where you can understand how one can, when the out-breath happens, that also starts gradually. And then the intensity increases, that where you can feel it properly, feel it well, and then it also fades away. Then after a little gap again, you come across the next in-breath. So this is a kind of a cycle. And this is where one has to recognize that. And if you are able to recognize these different paces of breath, then that indicates our mindfulness is further refined, clear comprehension further refines. And as a result, the whole breath starts to calm down. Whole body starts to calm down. Actually, breath and body is almost combined. So if the breath is calmed down, the body is also calmed down. If breath is sort of agitated, so the body also is agitated. So there's a big relationship, strong relationship between the breath and the body. And here actually we are paying more attention on breath, and accordingly the whole body actually change. Whole body, how it behaves actually change. So once it comes to the number 4, where breath starts to calm down and the body also calms down, and we have to facilitate that. And we should not misunderstand thinking our mindfulness has reduced or our mindfulness has dropped. Instead, what has happened is the breath has refined. So it is now a very subtle object. So it's almost very difficult to recognize whether it is the in-breath or out-breath. So there is some sort of a sensation, but you can't recognize whether it is in-breath or out-breath. Now we are reaching the... So far, all these 4 steps Buddha says belongs to the Kayanupassana. And next, we are reaching the Vedananupassana section. So if breath calms down and the body almost appear very lighter, then there's a possibility of sensations, kind of pleasant sensations to arise. They could be pleasurable sensations like goosebumps, or like waves, like floating, sort of blissful experiences, all sort of these kind of pleasurable experiences can happen. And that indicates piti patisangvedi asasissamiti sikkhati. So we can recognize them. And similarly, the number 6, sukha patisangvedi. So once this little gross level of pleasurable feelings fades away, there's a kind of a very contented feeling, sort of a happiness available throughout the body, throughout the mind. And that also has to be recognized. And most importantly, we have to recognize all these rather than trying to expect them or rather than trying to identify with them. So we basically have to recognize them like an outsider, and you are being outside. Now you understand, okay, the body is going through some pleasurable feelings. The body is feeling comfortable. The body is feeling happy. And the mind is feeling contented. All this you are recognizing like an outsider. And then we come to number 7, Chitta Sankara Patisangvedi Asasisamiti Sikkhati, where you are now recognizing various feelings as well as various perceptions, various signs also can appear. It is not that everyone may see all these perceptions, but there's a possibility of various perceptions to happen, various signs, mental images to appear. But we have to be very cautious here not to give any value to them, not to go after them. Even if you see a Buddha image, even if you see a pagoda, or even if you see a skeleton, or even if you see a kind of a dangerous devil image, they are just mental images. So don't worry of them. Simply understand they are mental images because your eyes are closed. So whatever you see as images are simply perceptions. So Buddha warns us, telling all perceptions are like mirage, they are not real. So you don't need to give any value to them because they are merely mirage, not water. They are not real. So as a result, we are now allowing them to fade away. That is the number 8. Asambhayan chitta sankharang asa sissamiti sikkhati. We are allowing all the perceptions and feelings, mental images, signs, all to calm down. And then if we are succeeded in that section, then we can get on to the 9th step that actually belongs to chittanupassana. So in chittanupassana section, we are in a position to look at the mind. So far, very much we are looking the body with the mind, but now we are looking the mind through the mind. So when one reaches this stage, so he basically supposed to have fair amount of mindfulness. He already gained some amount of mindfulness where he is capable of looking the mind through the mind. And again, we need to understand we are not restricting the mind. We are not restricting the mind or confining the mind or concentrating the mind purposely, but rather we open up the mind. We allow the mind to play as it likes because the yogi has some confidence about his own practice, about his own mindfulness. So he understands that the mindfulness is available even when mind plays, even when mind goes through various defilement. Still, one has the capacity to look at those defilements objectively. Suppose the mind is going through some angry feeling, angry thought, and you can recognize that. If mind is going through some lustful thought, one can recognize that. Not getting caught to them, not identifying with them. So this is the difference. So if you are capable of doing that, then all that also calms down. And as a result, mind feels more lighter, more spacious, and contentment, sort of a serenity is possible. So therefore, number 10, abhipramodayan chittang asasissamiti sikkhati. You can recognize now mind is in a very comfortable, less burdened kind of a situation. So then that actually paves the way to further calming down of the mind. Because the body almost have disappeared. There are no irritations or pains to disturb. And all the perceptions also calm down. No signs, no images, mental images. And now the mind also very calm. There are no defilements. And as a result, we come to number 11. Samadhan chittang asasissamiti sikkhati. Where mind is now more tranquil. And there actually you can understand, if we can let go of the body, if we can let go of the feelings, and if we can let go of perceptions, and again, if we can let go of various fabrications, sankhara, so ultimately the mind becomes completely free. So that is where vimocayan cittam assasisami iti sikkhati, number 12, where the mind becomes temporarily free from all the other aggregates. In other terms, the vijnana becomes free from rupa, the form, free from vedana, the feeling, free from sanya, the perceptions. And again, it's not making any sankharas, not making any fabrications. So it's very much still. And now it is free. This is actually very temporary, because mind is used to grasp, used to cling, used to hold so many things. Therefore, after a short freedom, after a short emptiness, again mind goes and grabs something. Now we can come to the Dhammanupassana section, that is number 13. Now, if yogi understood that I can experience some amount of freedom, some amount of spaciousness in the mind, and there are various phenomena coming and going. Now, if you pay attention to the body, there are various sort of stiffness, there are hardness, there are lightness, heaviness, irritations, and all these different characteristics are available in the body. They also come and go. They also appear, then last for a seconds, and then disappear. And if you see even the breath, and they also manifest. Breath also manifests like sometimes warm, sometimes cool, and sometimes sort of rubbing sensation, and some sort of movements, and all these appear and then disappear. They are transitory. They are actually not lasting for a long time, but they are very transient. They are quite impermanent. So therefore, once it comes to Dhammanupassana section, this Anicchanupassi, Assasisamiti Sikkhati indicates that we can observe various phenomena with an eye of impermanence. So we actually understand they are coming and going. They are not permanent. They are very transitory. So it is applicable to the body. It is applicable to the feelings. It is applicable to the perceptions. And it is applicable to sankharas. So if Suranga can get on to that diagram, if you can show that diagram, in that diagram, what I tried to indicate is that this Dhammanupassana section is valid, or you can introduce to Kayanupassana, Vedananupassana, and Chittanupassana. What I am trying to tell is, you can look at various bodily phenomenon as impermanent, or various feelings as impermanent, or various mental thoughts as impermanent. That's why I am trying to say this Dhammanupassana section is kind of a common characteristic where you can look at either Kayanupassana, you can actually apply this impermanence, contemplation on impermanence. You can apply to the body, that is to as the Kayanupassana. You can apply it to the Vedananupassana, or you can apply it to the Chittanupassana. Actually, in Satipatthana Sutta, it is very clearly mentioned in Kayanupassana section. Say, for example, Samudaya Dhammanupassīva Kāyasmin Viharati. Vaya Dhammanupassīva Kāyasmin Viharati. Samudaya Vaya Dhammanupassīva Kāyasmin Viharati. So that is where the yogi is looking at the body with an eye of impermanence. So he is now seeing the transitory nature of the bodily phenomena. Same thing here, when you reach contemplating impermanence, that is in the Dhammanupassana section, your mind is now capable of seeing the impermanence. More and more, suppose various phenomena appear, and if it is bodily phenomena, assume that again you start to feel the body and you feel some touch sensations, you feel some heaviness, you feel some lightness, you feel some irritations, you feel some movements. All these different characteristics, you can see that they appear and after a while they disappear. They come and go. They are quite transient. So you can recognize this impermanence. And if you apply it to the feelings, Vedana, so that is also the same. Suppose there's a happy feelings arise, and it also appear and then disappear. And if it is a painful feeling, it was not available before, but now there's a painful feeling arising. And after a while, it also disappears. And there was no pleasurable feeling. Okay, now there's a pleasurable feeling arising. And after a while, it is also disappearing. There's a kind of a pleasurable, pleasant feeling. And it is changing to, say, equanimous feeling. So now the equanimous feeling arises. And after a while, it disappears. So likewise, you can apply this impermanence, contemplation on impermanence, to Vedana as well, to various feelings as well. Either it may be pleasurable feelings, either it may be painful feelings, or it may be neither painful nor pleasurable feelings, that is the equanimous feelings. So you can apply this impermanence to the feelings as well. And again, you can apply it to the mind. We assume there's a kind of a desire arising in the mind. So you can look at it, how it arises and how it disappears. So there you recognize, okay, it is coming and going. It is not permanent. It is not lasting forever. So you just have to observe it like a third person. This desire doesn't belong to you. And if you make this distance, so then you understand, okay, it's also coming and going. It is also not permanent. It's also not everlasting. It is also transitory. And assume there's a lustful thought arise. The mind was not lustful before, but now, due to some reason, there's a lustful thought arise. And you can understand, okay, it is also arising. And after a while, it also fades away. It's also passing away. That is also impermanent. There's a loving kindness thought arise. And you can understand, okay, it is also arising. It's also now changing. It is also passing away. There is a compassionate thought arise. It is also arising. It is lasting for some time. Also changing. And again, it is passing away. We are not encouraging any wholesome thoughts here. And we are not suppressing any unwholesome thoughts. We look at them, we look at both categories objectively. They are merely thoughts. They are all impermanent. They are all transitory. They all come and they all go. So to understand this impermanence is actually a part of the Dhammanupassana. So this understanding can be applicable to the body, to the perceptions, to the thoughts, to the feelings, and whatever is appearing, you can apply. So that's why you can't predict actually to which I need to particularly apply it. So since if the yogi is capable, if he went through Kayanupassana, Vedanupassana, Chittanupassana, and he is now skillful, he can apply the eye of impermanence to everywhere, anywhere. Say, if there is a bodily feeling arise, now you can observe it and understand how impermanent it is, how transient it is. There's a feeling arise, you can apply similarly. Now, so more and more you do it, all these starts to fade away. So So as a result, now the yogi have some sort of a dispassion towards his mind, because he has no grasping to them. Even various bodily sensations arise, he understood now they are coming and going. I don't need to bother much. I don't need to grasp them. I don't need to give much value to them. Even if it's a pleasurable feeling, I don't need to hold it strongly, because it is quite impermanent. They come and go. So that previous passion he had, previous grasping he had, the attitude of clinging he had is no more. Now it has changed into a kind of a dispassion. So the number 14 is Viraganu Passi, Asa Sissamit Sikkati. So you are now very much looking at the whole process with a kind of a viraga, kind of a dispassion. You are not going to grasp any of them. Either it may be bodily phenomenon, either it may be feelings, either it may be perceptions, signs, mental images, thoughts, whatever it is. You are very much disengaged. You are not trying to own them. You are not trying to possess them. You are not trying to identify with them. You are not encouraging them. So you are now disengaged. You have some distance from them. So you can look at them. So that is where Viraga Anupassi. And then Nirodha Anupassi. And you can see they all faded away. They all passed away. And there is a sort of emptiness. There is a sort of a cessation. So since you didn't try to suppress any of these, since you didn't try to encourage any of these, so they all appear due to various causes, and you were objectively looking at them, objectively watching them, observing them, and they come to their natural cessation. You didn't do any kind of a forceful cessation, but rather all these phenomena comes to their natural cessation. So if something comes to a natural cessation, there's a possibility for another one to avoid coming for a smaller period of time. What I'm trying to tell is, so if something passes away due to natural causes, so there are due to causes something arisen, and those causes fade away, passed away, ceased, and the result also passed away, ceased. If the causes are no more, the causes are not available, so this phenomena cannot arise. So there's a little gap with nothing, basically. So this cessation one can experience, that is Nirodha, that there is nothing there. There is kind of a spaciousness. There is a gap. There is an emptiness. There is a kind of a void. So one can see that void again and again. One can put his hand or his attention to that void. So this void and that number 12 in the Vimochayan Chittang is the similar. So when the mind becomes free, so basically what it touches is this voidness, this emptiness, this spaciousness. And here number 15, Nirodha Anupassi, where yogi is actually seeing more to the Nirodha side, the fading away side, passing away side. So as a result, mind get on to this Nirodha, get on to this cessation, touching the emptiness more and more. And number 16 is Patinissagga Anupassi Asa Sissamiti Sikkhati, where when whatever the phenomenon arises, so the yogi is ready to relinquish it and apply his attention back to that emptiness, back to that spaciousness. So actually Patinissagga Anupassi has two sides. One is Parichaga Patinissagga, where you are giving up the arisen phenomena. You are not holding it. You are not encouraging it. You are not grasping it. And then you establish yourself again back in that cessation, back in that emptiness, back in that spaciousness, that is the pakkhandana parinissagga. So number 16, parinissagga anupassi, basically has two levels, or rather than levels, small, very much like two sides, where you are relinquishing the recent phenomena and back establish yourself back in that emptiness, that is the pakkhandana parinissagga anupassi, where you back in that emptiness. So therefore, very beautifully Buddha explains this whole sutta, these 16 steps, especially number 13, 14, 15 and 16, where purely vipassana. Purely vipassana point of view, how one can see impermanence of body, feelings, perceptions, formations, fabrications, and seeing every phenomena like with a viraga, with a dispassion, not holding, not grasping. And again, nirodha anupassi, that is more having sort of a seeing more the cessation side, fading away side, passing away side, and very much driving the mind more towards the emptiness, more towards the cessation, more towards the spaciousness. So the mind becomes more and more empty, more and more spacious, more and more clear, and less burdened, and still, quiet, and all these properties, all these characteristics one can recognize by going through this practice. So I think it is enough for today. It's in a way a little deep subjects dealt today in terms of the Dhammanupassana section. So with that information, with that short sermon, I would like to conclude today's sermon, and I open up the session for questions.
Sorry, Bhante, so there are 7 questions today. Yeah. Question 1 of 7, sitting mindfulness. Dear Venerable Swami Nwansa, when I do sitting practice, I develop some aches and pains around my hips at times. I concentrate on the pain and then come back to the breathing after a few seconds. The pain disappears. I thought this is Vedana Anupassana meditation until your sermon last week. So am I incorrect to think this is Vedana Anupassana? Can you kindly explain? Thank you. May you attain Nirvana. That's the end.
Actually, in Vedana Anupassana, it is no big difference. The point is, when you are in the Vedana Anupassana section, you are skillful, you are capable to look at feelings objectively. You are not taking them personally, you are not sort of having any kind of a disappointment, displeasure towards them. You are not adding towards any pain. Rather, you can endure pain. You can observe pain objectively. So that's the difference. So one needs to develop this attitude. So at the beginning stage, we don't have that attitude. So at the beginning, in a way, we have to overcome Vedana with some posture change. So you are simply avoiding pain, because so far, I mean, still we are not capable, skillful to handle pain. But as you progress, you are coming to a region, coming to an area where you can handle pain. You can endure it. You can look at it. You can disengage from pain and look at pain as pain. It is not my pain. It is not kind of an attitude that why this pain comes to me, why all others are sitting very quietly, very blissfully, why all these pains are coming to me. So that is looking at the pain with the personality view. You are personifying. You are looking in a wrong direction, with a wrong viewpoint, wrong angle. But in Vedana Anupassana, Vedana, feeling, is looking at or observing purely objectively. It is happening due to causes, especially due to contact, passa. And as a result of that, various feelings are arising when contact is available to produce a pleasurable feeling. So then the pleasurable feeling arises. When contact is available to produce a painful feeling, then painful feeling arises. When there is a category of contact producing neutral feeling, so then neutral feelings arise. So the contact is the main cause, and with respect to the causing contact, there are different types of feelings arise. And they also come and go. None of them are permanent. And at the beginning, the feeling appear like, sorry, feeling appear like one unit, one single pain, one single pressure. But more and more you look at it, and it starts to divide. And there may be many pains or many pleasures, many happiness. And even if you look at it more closely, probably there are hundreds, thousands of little feelings, a collection of feelings may be available. So this is the kind of the kind of advanced level of looking at Vedana, various feelings, where your sampajanya, clear comprehension has fairly developed. So you can recognize various facets of Vedana, various components of Vedana, and more clearly, and recognizing how they each little feelings are arising, and how instantly they pass away, and then how at another place another feeling arises. So likewise, you are now investigating pain, investigating pleasure, investigating equanimity. So this is, we can say, more into Vedana Anupassana. So slowly, slowly, you can get on to that.
Question number two of seven, day-to-day activities. Venerable Sir, last time you mentioned a technique to use if we get any high emotional thoughts, which are somewhat easy to catch. In such a situation, the guidance is to be mindful as much as possible to observe the rising of the emotion, detach, and then wait as a third person without reacting while it is brewing in the mind, and eventually observe how it is vanishing without our involvement. I have used this technique successfully several times, and thank you for your valuable advice. My observation is that it takes 5 to 10 seconds, or short time, for these emotions to arrive. And that's even if we are lucky enough to catch and observe them. And the dance lasts longer. So that's usually 2 to 3 minutes, and then the vanishing part takes forever, sometimes 10 to 15 minutes. Mathematically, it is pretty left skewed, curve towards zero, and it has a long tail. I was expecting a standard bell curve where rising and vanishing happens with equal probability. Presume with the practice, my left skewed and rather crooked bell curve flattens out a bit. Thank you for the guidance. That's the end.
Yeah, I think here for emotions, you can't apply this bell curve. It is very much like going up and down. The time taken to fade away might vary. So say, actually what you did is correct, but how it fades away might be different. We can't predict what would be the pattern, how they are. Basically you can come up with some sort of a pattern. They are at the beginning, say 1 month ago, suppose once the emotion arise, so you couldn't recognize it immediately at its inception, but you could only recognize it after a couple of seconds. But now we are applying mindfulness to it. Now you are observing it. Now it lasted for, say, a couple of minutes, say 5 minutes. And then it faded away. And that also took another 1 minute, 2 minutes. But after another 1 month, so the picture actually change. Now you can recognize it at its inception, maybe within a couple of seconds, maybe within 3 seconds, 2 seconds you can recognize. And once you recognize it at its inception, so then it may not come to very high level. So as a result, it quickly passes away. So likewise, you can see this whole pattern change. So with mindfulness improvement, you can see that mindfulness becoming stronger and stronger just by looking at it, just by recognition is fair enough for these emotions to passing away. So therefore, more and more we look at them objectively, more and more we observe them, less and less impact. And they become weaker and weaker. And mind becomes more clear. And even when a slight thought of emotion arising, so you can recognize it, you can understand. Rather than fertilizing it, rather than identifying it as mine or me, now you can see it, you can observe it, how it is coming, due to what causes, due to what reasons it is coming. So how inner chatter trying to pops up, inner chatter trying to add to it. So our likes and dislikes going to make some changes. And our past memories trying to hook into it, trying to attach to it. So all these are trying to contribute towards this emotion. But if we are quite wise, so we can see them objectively. We can see this mechanism and we can avoid it. We don't need to become a victim of this process. So as a result, this become sort of, this starts to dissolve. It doesn't strengthen, rather it becomes dissolving. It starts to disappear. So this is the kind of the behavior of these emotions.
Question number 3 of 10. This has 2 parts, Bhante, so I'll do the mindful sitting and then we'll go to the second part. Venerable Bhante, I started very freshly as a beginner and I have been continuing sitting practice for about 2 months according to your guidance. I occupationally do walking practice but prefer sitting meditation. I practice about 4 to 5 times per week while playing your recorded instruction on the website. My prominent feeling is rising and falling, and from time to time I try to concentrate to the breath around the nostril, but it didn't work for me. Now I am concentrating only on the rising and falling. As usual, my mind is always wondering about the past and future, but immediately it clicks to me and I drag it and continue my meditation practice. My question is, all steps described under Anapanasati Sutta is based on breath. How do I relate my current practice to breathing practice steps? Do I need to anyhow learn breathing practice to continue my meditation towards success? Much merits for your guidance. That's the end.
Yeah, actually, rising and falling also very much analogs to this 16 steps. We are at the beginning, it is more into the Kayanupassana section where you understand the body, or rather the abdomen, is rising and then falling. Rising and then falling. And then you are now removing the concept of this abdomen, but rather you can see the movement. There's a slight movement. There's a stiffness. There's a kind of a lightness. All these different element characteristics you can recognize. At the beginning, it appears like a whole process, but now this whole process, or rather one single phenomena, now it starts to dissolve, to divide into various different things. Say, for example, during rising, such as minor levels of movements, it's a collection of movements. And ultimately it comes to sort of a stiffness. That is the place it stops. And there's a little gap. Then it is coming up, coming back. There's a falling cycle. There's a calendar, again a collection. Movements of collection. So more and more you recognize that, then more we are in the Kayanupasana section. So if this whole process calms down, then the whole body appears quite lighter. You don't feel much heaviness. Whole body becomes quite lighter. And it's like floating, all rising and falling almost disappear. You can't distinguish whether now rising happens or falling happens. So it's very much like everything calmed down. Now there's a possibility of pleasurable feelings to arise. Now we are in the Vedanupasana section. And if you are capable of recognizing them, now you can go through the second section of Anapanasati Sutta. Number 5, 6, 7, 8. So that all belong to Vedanupasana. So it also can happen while going through rising and falling. And then that also disappears and that also calms down. And then one can look at the mind. We are back in the Chittanupasana section. Because rising and falling purely is more biased towards the Vipassana. And Anapanasati also, in this sutta, Buddha is explaining more towards Vipassana. Not into the Samatha practice, not into the concentration practice, but more into the Vipassana practice. So rising and falling directly actually taking us towards Vipassana. So how it manifests is very analogous with this Anapanasati Sutta. So therefore you can understand now with this information, you can try to understand where you are. According to Anapanasati, these 16 steps, you can understand where you stand in your practice.
So this is part two, same person. This is day-to-day activities. Now I try my best to keep focus on my mind in my day-to-day life. It doesn't mean I 100% focus, but within a few seconds, I can realize if I go away. Then I take it back and concentrate to my work. I drive a lot for my office work. During driving, I had a practice to listen to songs and radio. But after joining with this program, I try my best to focus to my body vibration and different sections of my body to improve my concentration. When I feel bored, I again start listening to music. Do you have any advice to improve my daily life concentration? Much merits for your guidance. That's the end.
Yeah, you can remove the cassette player. So that actually helps you to endure boredom. Because boredom is also a part of the practice. So don't expect to get rid of boredom. Instead, when boredom arises, so you need to be with it. We need to understand. So the point is, we always want to get rid of this boredom. So boredom is nothing but equanimous feelings. You know, we are actually shifting from pleasure to pain. So this is like a pendulum. We are always either on the pleasure side or we may go into some pain. But whenever we go through some equanimous feeling, we don't want to be there. We always want to get rid of it. We always want to have some pleasure. So again, we listen music. Again, we go to the movies. We again watch TV. And we again maybe go to internet or call a friend, take a newspaper. This is how we always trying to get rid of this boredom. But the mindfulness practice helps us to understand this boredom. Just be with this boredom. Because if you always have an attitude of getting rid of boredom, then actually it's difficult to go through, because this boredom actually has a big relationship with this equanimity, equanimous feeling. So therefore, don't switch on your, say, cassette player or CD player. So try to maybe at least a couple of minutes enhance this period. Say, for example, you are able to be aware of whole process 10 minutes. After that, you switch on the cassette player. Maybe next day, you are being aware of for 15 minutes. Now you have enhanced the period, 15 minutes. And then maybe you switch on the cassette player. Next day, maybe you are enduring it, experiencing it for 20 minutes. And then you are switching on the cassette player. So likewise, you can enhance it. You can increase the time period. So ultimately, you don't need to switch on the cassette player. And so likewise, slowly, slowly, you can simply come back to you. Because this news, cassette players, TV, and all these things take our attention outside. We are driven outside. But mindfulness practice requires coming to ourselves, coming back to ourselves, observing more and more ourselves. So therefore, change that attitude. And don't worry, I mean, you don't need to do it immediately. Slowly, slowly, gradually, you can do it.
Question number 4 of 10. It's a general question. Dear Venerable Sir, it is very helpful to know and understand in the detail the 16 steps of breathing meditation based on your explanations in the Dhamma Talk series. I recall that you mentioned that it's not mandatory and essential that we follow each and every step as a sequence. There can be gaps and unclear areas, and we should take them as signposts. Also, we have heard that when we start the meditation, we should have a beginner's mind at all times. Does that mean in practice, we forget about the 16 steps and start the meditation without any pre-knowledge or expectations of a state and let it go as it unfolds? At what point should we compare our experience with the signposts in the scriptures with metta? That's the end.
Yeah, exactly. That is the correct approach. We don't need to remember all these 16 steps. And on meditation, we don't need to compare ourselves whether I'm sitting on Kayanupassana or whether now the piti arise, all these things. If you are trying to memorize all these 16 steps and try to apply it while in meditation, then it's a big trouble. And then, we are actually putting the cart before the horse. But rather, where this information helps us is after the session. Say you went through the sitting session, now you open your eyes, and then you want to sort of have a kind of a hide view of what has happened. You are simply looking back. You are very much like doing an introspection of what has happened during the meditation session. So at that time you can see, okay, during first say 10 minutes it was going through like this kind of a situation, this kind of an experience, and after that it has switched to this kind of a situation, and after that it has switched to this sort of a situation. So likewise, you can see that different phases are there available in the experience, and that you can have a kind of an analogy between these 16 steps. So that is for your clarity of understanding. Just the Sutame Jnana, and maybe in order to understand how each of your session has contributed towards Satipatthana. Because we need some amount of convincing happen. Because if we don't know where we are going, because time to time, now say you are going on a trip. So time to time, you are looking at the advertisements, you are looking at the name boards, you are looking at the, say, signpost, just to know that, just to clarify, okay, I am in the correct track, I am in the correct route. So similarly, you do your practice with an empty mind, with a beginner's mind, and at the end of the session, you can compare your experience with this knowledge, with this Sutame Jnana, and then you know, okay, I'm in the correct track. Yeah.
Question number 5 of 11. This is a fairly long one, a long report, but it's on walking mindfulness. Venerable Bhante, This report is regarding my walking practice based on the last 2 to 3 sessions. Usually I find time for 1 hour practice per day. I start focusing on the soles of my foot and observe the sensations, noting left and right. After a few minutes, when I clearly start observing the sensations, the noting drops off automatically. I can identify how each foot is touching the ground based on the pressure. First on the heel, then the weight transfer around the outer edge to the small toe, and then one after the other, all the toes get involved bearing the weight up to the big toe. I observe that the big toe then pushes the leg backwards, transferring the weight to the ball of the foot, which continues the push until the other foot touches the ground. During this process, I also observe that I cannot feel the areas between the ball of the foot and the heel. Also, I can identify some small differences of this process between the left and right foot, which gives me indications of this is left or this is right. I can also feel heat and cold sensations between some areas of each foot, which vary based on the left or right side. After 10 to 15 minutes, these clear and vivid sensations start to fade away, and sometimes I could hardly identify which foot is left or right. Another indication during this stage is sleepiness, which creeps in automatically. However, based on Bhante's guidance, I exert more vigilance and attention on the feet when sleepiness starts, and it gets gradually cleared off within a few minutes. The other usual observation during the stage is the wandering mind, which drifts to different thoughts. Since the sensations are blurred, the mind usually drifts to various thoughts. When I realize that I'm not with the walking sensations anymore, I note them as thoughts and wait till the mind comes back to the blurred sensation. Sometimes the sensations become sharp again, and the mind stays with the walking process for another 4 to 5 minutes. The cycle repeats, blurring happens, mind drifting is observed, and waiting till it comes back to the walking. I feel happy when the mind comes back by itself. It appears like playing a video game, but in a cool, relaxed manner. This is the usual process till the session ends, which makes me calm and relaxed at the end. This relaxed, happy feeling lasts about 30 minutes after the session as well. I can feel the relaxation and heightened alertness in the whole body for some time, like a flux, and it fades away slowly when engaged in daily activities. Much merits for your valuable guidance, Bhante. That's the end.
Yeah, actually, if you are experiencing this kind of situation, when it is impossible or hard to recognize whether it is left leg or right leg, it is not needed actually. So all these typical conceptual information actually disappear with the practice. It's very similar. I mean, say in Anapanasati Sutta, we were explaining you that at the beginning we can see, okay, this is the in-breath, this is the out-breath. But then we are forgetting about that information, conceptual information, but we are more going towards the real information. That is the law, the whether it is arising, whether it is changing, whether it is calming down. So once we reach the fourth stage, we can't distinguish. We don't know whether it is the in-breath or whether it is the out-breath, because that information has lost. So just a kind of a sensation is available. And if we try to put a label, stick a label telling, okay, this is the in-breath, this is the out-breath, it happens at the nostril. But then actually we don't know the kamataha. We don't know the instruction. We should not complicate the situation, make the situation complex. Rather, we have to allow the process to simplify. So similarly here also in walking meditation, so at the beginning, suppose as you have mentioned, so we may be applying kind of a label. This is left, this is right, this is left, this is right. But with time, we have to allow it to fade away. Now, with a quiet mind, silent mind, we are simply observing it. So you feel it, okay? There's a kind of a sensation in the leg. On next leg also, there's a kind of a touching sensation. There's a stiffness, there's a hardness. So, and ultimately, all even these things disappear. And they also coming and go. And now you don't know whether it is left or right, or whether you are sort of in a particular room or Australia or Sri Lanka, and all this information is lost. We don't need actually that information at that refined level. We don't need to get them. But rather we are now more into a very refined reality, more kind of fundamental levels of our experience. And that is where we need to understand how fragile these things are, how transient these experiences are. Say, sort of a hardness arises and it passes away. Softness arises, it passes away. Then roughness arises, it passes away. Kind of movement arises, it passes away. Throughout the whole body maybe even. Not just in the legs, but throughout the whole body, various sensations arise and pass away. So you probably can get on to that kind of a picture while in walking meditation. So if that is that kind of a thing happens, so mind opens up. Mind cannot be sort of kind of hold on to anything. You are not memorizing anything, but rather kind of an open mind, which is utterly in the present moment and seeing how things are arising and passing away. So we are more getting on to the deep levels of vipassana. So therefore, don't complex your experience, rather allow it to become more and more simple, simplified and more refined.
This is just a general question that's come in. This program is very effective and helpful to gain mindfulness with very valuable instructions. Is there any program conducted by Bhante in singular medium to join our Sri Lankans who are not good in understanding English? That's the end of the question.
So far, I mean, there is no such online session. But if any of you are interested, I can support it. But I mean, at the moment, there is no any online Sinhala session. But Bhante Dhammajiva is conducting. And there are actually virtual retreats started. Today, Bhante Dhammajiva started a 3 days virtual retreat. And there is another virtual retreat online. And actually, on coming Saturday, we are starting the one-day retreat in Nissaranavanaya. That's on 8th. We have the one-day session. And likewise, we are starting our residential retreat slowly. But there is no any kind of online session that I am working on Sinhala medium. But I mean, I can consider it if any of you are sort of organizing it.
Bhante, sorry, we've gone a little bit over time. Is it okay if we continue?
Yeah.
We've got about another 5 questions. Question number 6 of 11, sitting mindfulness. Dear Bhante, I haven't been practicing sitting for some time. However, every time I sit, I am able to sit for hours, not feeling the body. I have only sat thinking, I am here and now. The present moment awareness unknowingly. I have always been in the present moment in day-to-day work and have trained mindfulness. I have not seen my breath, but I have been with my thoughts. I have seen thoughts coming and going. I have not chased after them. At times, the mind was silent. However, lately, I started listening to Bhana, and this is the first time I'm listening to Anapanasati Sutta. My question is, do I have to go step by step looking at my breath, then checking for Vedana and so on? Much merits, Bhante. That's the end.
Yeah. No, not at all. Actually, if your practice is into this level, you don't need to go through again on these Anapanasati sections. Rather, you can observe the mind more and more. Because as you can see, it's a kind of a gradual process. Here in the instructions, it's more generalized. It's given for a beginner, how a beginner may grow towards the different stages. And if we have practiced using various other techniques and they are now capable of watching the mind, how thoughts are arising and passing away, and even if we can dwell in the emptiness, and if this kind of situation is there, you don't need to go back to Anapanasati. You can simply continue your practice.
For question number 7 of 11, I'll pass to Chamlaanti. It's a singular and English part.
So as I answered this question, they sent in Sinhala. Yeah. So I'll read the Sinhala question first and I've done a little translation of it. And then I'll present so that the others can also understand. Question is, Gauravaniya Swamin Vahansa, Satra Satipatthana Bhavanava Karana Vita, Palamuyen Kaya Anupassanava, Divanuva Vedana Anupassanava, Tunvenuva Chitta Anupassanava, අවසානයේ ධම්මානුපස්සනාව යන පිළිවෙලටම භාවනාව සිදු කළ යුතුද? එසේත් නැත්නම් ඕන පිළිවෙලකට මෙම භාවනාව සිදු කළ හැකිද? කායානුපස්සනාව කරන විට ශරීරයේ වේදනාවල් දැනේ. එම වේදනාවේ විපරිණාම දැකීම වේදනානුපස්සනාවද? අනුකම්පා කර උපදෙස් දෙන්න. I'll read the English question as well. Dear respected Bhante, when practicing the four foundations of mindfulness, should we follow the order of first Kayanupassana, then Vedananupassana, third Chittanupassana, and then Dhammanupassana? Or can we practice in any order? When practicing Kayanupassana, I feel pains in the body. Is being aware of the transformation of these pains Vedananupassana? Please explain. It's the end of the question.
ඇත්තම මෙතනදී ඒ කියන්නේ බැහැ ගන්න අපිට තියෙන භාවනාවට මේ කායනුපස්සනාව හරහා. මොකද අපිට හිතෙන් හිත බලනවා කියන එක පහසු වැඩක් නෙමෙයි. ඒක බුදුරජාණන් වහන්සේත් විශේෂයෙන්ම මේ පොඩි වෝනින් එකක් දෙනවා. පොඩි අනුතුරු ඇඟවීමක් කරනවා මේ හිතින් හිත බලන එකට නැත්තම් මේ චිත්තානුපස්සනාවට එකපාරට එන්න එපාය. ඇවිල්ලා අනුතුරු වැටෙන්න වෙනවය. සතිය දිනුනලා නැත්තම් සම්පජඤ්ඤය දිනුනලා නැත්තම් කියලා. ඉතින් ඒ නිසා අපිට භාවනාව පටන් ගන්න පහසුම තැන තමයි කායනුපස්සනාව. ඒකෙන් තමයි අපි පටන් ගන්නෙ. හුස්ම දිහා බලනවා නැත්නම් පාදයේ ස්පර්ශය දිහා බලනවා සක්මනක අපි යෙදෙනවා. ඊළඟට පිම්බීමක් හැකිලිමක් දිහා බලනවා. ඉතින් මේ විදිහට කයෙන් පටන් ගන්න එක තමයි බොහොම පිරිසුදුව අපිට තේරෙන පහසු තැන. ඒක හැබැයි දිනුනාට පස්සේ ටික ටික මේක හරියට නිකන් අර ක්‍රමානුකූලව වැඩෙන පැලයක් වගේ ඊළඟ කොටසට බොහොම ස්වාභාවිකව අපි වරගෙන යනවා. අපි දඟලන්න දෙයක් නැහැ. ඊළඟ පණින්න ඕනේ ඉක්මනට ඔන්න වේදනානුපස්සනාවට මම යන්න ඕනේ. ඉක්මනට මම චිත්තානුපස්සනාවට යන්න ඕනේ. ඉක්මනට මම ධම්මානුපස්සනාව වඩන්න ඕනේ කියලා එහෙම කලබලයක් අවශ්‍ය නැහැ. මොකද මේ හැම සෙක්ෂන් එකක්ම හැම පරිච්ඡේදයක්ම හරිම බලවත්. එකක්වත් සුළුපටු නැහැ. කායනුපස්සනාව හොඳට කෙනෙක් දිනු කරනවා නම් ඒකේ අප්‍රමාණ ප්‍රතිඵල තියෙනවා. අප්‍රමාණ ප්‍රයෝජන තියෙනවා. වේදනානුපස්සනාව කෙනෙක් බහුලීකృత කරනවා නම් ඒකේ අප්‍රමාණ ප්‍රතිඵල තියෙනවා. ප්‍රයෝජන තියෙනවා. චිත්තානුපස්සනාව ඒ වගේ, ධම්මානුපස්සනාව ඒ වගේ. ඒ නිසා චිත්තානුපස්සනාව ධම්මානුපස්සනාව වඩන්න නම් යම් පමණක සතිමත් භාවයක් අනිවාර්ය වෙනවා. ඒක එකපාර්තම කෙනෙකුට පටන් ගැනීමේදී සුදුසු නැහැ. නමුත් කායනුපස්සනාව බහුල වශයෙන් කරන්න පුළුවන්. ඉතින් එතනින් තමයි අපිට පටන් ගන්න තියෙන්නේ. ඒක වඩාගෙන යනකොට ඉබේටම වේදනානුපස්සනාවට අපි තල්ලු වෙන්න ඉඩ තියෙනවා. ඒක කිසි ගැටලුවක් නැහැ. ඒ නිසා මේතන ඇත්තටම මේ සූත්‍ර දේශනාවලදී මේ පෙන්නුම් කරලා තියෙන පිළිවෙල බොහෝ දුරට ඉතින් සාර්ථකයි කියන්න පුළුවන්. නමුත් ඉතින් බොහොම ඉඳලා හිටලා ඇතමෙක් ඉන්න පුළුවන් සමානලාවට මේ බොහොම හේතු සම්පත් තියෙන දියුණු වෙච්ච යම් පමණක සතිමත් භාවයක් තියෙන හිත දිහා බලන්න සෑහෙන නැඹුරුවක් තියෙන ඒකේ හැකියාවක් තියෙන කෙනෙක් ඉන්න පුළුවන් නැත්තේ නැහැ. ඒ බඳු කෙනෙකුට ඉතින් කැණිම චිත්තානුපසනාවෙන් උනත් පටන් ගන්න පුළුවන්. ඒ කියන්නේ අපිට නිකන් ඕනනම් චෙක් කරලා බලන්න පුළුවන් මේ අපි බලන්න ගියාම අපි අහු වෙනවද කියලා. ඒ කියන්නේ හිතන්න දැන් අපේ හිතේ රාගයක් අහු වෙලා රාගයක් දුවනවා නම් අපි ඒ රාගෙ දිහා බලන්න ගිහලා අපි රාගෙට අහු වෙනවා නම් තව රාගෙ උච්ඡන්න වෙනවා නම් ඒ කියන්නේ ඉතින් සත්තාම සතිය දිනලා මදි ඒ වගේ දෙයක් කරන්න. එතකොට වඩාම සුදුසුයි මේ කායනුපස්සනාවක් වගේ දෙයක් වඩලා අපේ සතිමත් භාවය දියුණු කරගෙන ඊට පස්සේ ක්‍රමානුකූලව යන ගමන හරිම නිරවුල් කියන්න පුළුවන්. කරදර අඩුයි කියන්න පුළුවන්. අනතුරු අඩුයි කියන්න පුළුවන්. ඊළඟට දැන් ප්‍රශ්නයක් අහනවා මේ කයේ වේදනාව දැනෙනවා ඒක දිහා බලන එක වේදනානුපස්සනාවද කියලා. ඒකට අපි කලිනුත් පිළිතුරක් දුන්නා. يعني වේදනානුපස්සනාවට එනකොට තව ටිකක් අපි බලාපොරොත්තු වෙනවා වේදනාවෙන් අයින් වෙලා වේදනාව දිහා බලන්න පුළුවන් හැකියාවක්. ඒක කායනුපස්සනාව හොඳට හදාගෙන යනකොට ඒ කියන්නේ කායනුපස්සනාවෙන් හැදිච්ච සතිමත් භාවය හිතේ ඒකාග්‍රතාවය පාවිච්චි කරලා වේදනාවක් දිහා වේදනාවක් වශයෙන් දැකගැනීමේ හැකියාව ඇති වෙනවා. ඒකට දුක් වේදනාවක් ආවත් අපේ හිතේ අමනාපයක් ඇති කරගන්න නැතුව ඒකෙන් පැනලා යන්න හදන්නේ නැතුව ඒක හොඳට නිරීක්ෂණය කරන්න පුළුවන් හැකියාවක්. ඒක දිහා නිකන් බාහිරින් ඉඳගෙන බලන්න පුළුවන් හැකියාවක් අපි තුළ වර්ධනය වෙලා තියෙනවා නම් එහෙනම් ඉතින් අපි වේදනානුපස්සනාව සඳහා සුදුසුකම් ලැබලා තියෙනවා කියලා කියන්න පුළුවන්. ඉතින් මම ආරාධනා කරනවා අවශ්‍ය නම් චමිලට මේක පරිවර්තනය කරන්න කියලා ඉංග්‍රීසියට. චමිලා
සයින්නසට කියන්නේ ඉල්ලන්නේ ට්‍රාන්ස්ලේට් කරන්න පුළුවන්ද
කියලා. චමිලා පොඩ්ඩක් ට්‍රාන්ස්ලේට් කරලා කියන්න.
දැන් කියන්නද? So the way I understood that is the reason why we have those four steps as in that order is because it's mainly easy because you start with the kayanupassana and focus on the body and then you can move on to the other steps, and also the fact that if you need to have a reasonable amount of mindfulness practice already or your to be able to do Cittanupassana and Dhammanupassana. So if there could be some people who actually do have that ability already and they can start at Cittanupassana, but it is mostly recommended that you start with Kayanupassana because it is more easy for people to start there. So that is the reason why it is recommended to do like that. Is that correct, Sainasa?
Yeah, correct. Yes. In the sense that I have mentioned. So basically it is quite easy to start with Kayanupassana, and because we have to understand that nowadays we are in a more sort of a restless mind. Our minds are not that concentrated, our minds are not that pure. So we have to start where we are. So there's a easy access through Kayanupassana where various bodily activities, bodily phenomena can be observed using the mind. So that is more direct and that is more possible. And you can even measure your progress. Okay. We'll get on to the next question.
Question number 8 of 11. Dear Bhante, this is a general question. Thank you for your fantastic explanations as usual. I am not this advanced in my practice, but I am a bit confused by step 15 and 16. Sorry for any misunderstandings on my part. You mentioned in step 15 about putting your hand in the void. If you are aiming to do this, will it not evade you? In step 16, you mentioned directing yourself back to cessation. The only thing I know to do right now is to direct myself to breath, which is a gross phenomenon. Right now, I can't comprehend how one directs back to cessation. That's the end.
Yeah, actually, that's what I said. This is little where you need to go through a fair amount of practice in order to understand this section. Where the idea is that the yogis come across some sort of a non-grasping area, sort of no non-clinging, unattached sort of a possibility is there. So the yogi is expected to pay more attention towards that, giving more prominence towards that than holding on to any phenomena. So, I mean, I think some people or the yogis who have experienced this can understand what I am telling, but for a newcomer, when I am telling like this, it's a bit difficult to simply theoretically understand this or to sort of imagine what it is. So don't worry about this. So So when you are developing, you may experience this and then we'll discuss.
Question number 9 of 11. Dear Bhante, it's a general question. Is it possible to reach the ultimate Dhammanupassana state by practicing the walking meditation as well? That's the end.
Yes, can. Definitely can. Because walking meditation can be considered either in the Kayanupassana section or Vedananupassana section. Or while walking, you can even look at the mind and practice Chittanupassana. So therefore, walking can be used for any area. So while walking, so if you are looking at impermanence of various bodily phenomena or various element characteristics, then we are in the Anicca-anupassi. Suppose you interpret them like feelings. Okay, there's a equanimous feeling. It is also arising, risen, and then it passed away. There's a kind of pleasurable feeling. It arisen and then it passed away. So likewise, now we are in the Vedananupassana section, but seeing the impermanence. Similarly, suppose the body is walking, but you are paying more attention towards the thoughts in the mind. So assume there's an angry thought, kind of a resistance in the mind. And it appeared and then it disappeared. Again, mind becomes kind of equanimous. Then there's loving thoughts, loving kindness thought arising. And you are looking at it objectively while walking. Body is walking, but you are looking at the mind. And now the thought disappeared. Now you are actually doing Chittanupassana, but more practicing it by looking at them, all the phenomena, through an impermanence eye. So therefore, you can apply the Dhammanupassana section while walking meditation as well.
Question number 10 of 11. It's a theory question. Vandami Bhante. I have heard there are three characteristics of people, Vedana, perception, and Sankara. I can understand perception character when doing the practice. Could you please kindly explain Vedana character, where they grasp in the practice? Much merits. That's the end.
Yeah, Vedana characters are more towards, when there are various bodily, say, feelings arising, if we are trying to hold them, if we claim them, if we want to keep them, if we are inviting them, if we are clinging to them, so then we can say, okay, we are, actually this is common to everyone. Typical pleasure principle is a kind of a universal characteristic. So typical approach towards the pain. We all want to get rid of pain. So this is a kind of a common attitude we all have, but there may be little difference in certain people where they are more victimized towards that principle. They are going more after the pressure. They are more trying to get rid of pain. No patience at all. No endurance at all. So then we can say, okay, they are lacking of any kind of a endurability, any kind of a patience. So we can say like that.
Question number 11, and this is the last one. Mindful sitting. Venerable Bhante, I sit down to my mindful sitting with your guided meditation. I start by looking at my body and my posture. Once I'm fairly mindful, I shift my focus to the nose and the breathing. I notice that by this time, my breath has become soft and calm, has become fairly soft and calm. Then breath further softens until there is nothing for a few seconds. Then I feel my body bubble up and start to get agitated and start panicking. I stay with this feeling for a while and it calms down. But as it calms down, my breath becomes more gross. The question is this normal and is it okay not to feel any pleasurable feeling or rapture? And should I endure this agitated state and just observe it? That's the end of the question.
Yeah, correct. Because as I said, now, there's a higher possibility that we may come across pleasurable feelings, sort of say lighter kind of feeling, floating kind of feeling. Those are possible, but they also go up and down. I mean, when with time, so it can go to the other side. There may be little irritations, little itchy kind of feelings, little resistance. So all these things actually come. They also, we have to look at them objectively. So Vedananupassana, this section actually deals with any side. It may be dukkha, it may be sukha, it may be upekkha. That is the painful side, the pleasurable side, as well as the equanimous side. So we can't predict what is going to happen. So that is that very understanding is insight. So that very understanding, we may be expecting some pleasurable feelings, but what actually arisen are, say, unpleasant feelings, irritation, kind of painful feelings. So there you will understand, okay, I have no governance here. I have no control here. So then suppose you are trying to endure this painful feeling, expecting it to disappear quickly, but it is lasting for a long time. There you understand, okay, this has no control. I mean, they come due to various other causes on which I have no control, and they last due to those causes on which I have no control, and they disappear when they want, not that I want. So more and more we are getting kind of a dispassion, more and more kind of an insight arise on non-self, anatta. So this is how we are actually understanding the impermanence, understanding the unsatisfactoriness, and understanding the non-self. It is not that we are going through various suttas and trying to sort of memorize anything, but by mere observation helps us to practically understand how these things are working, how much transient they are, how much unsatisfactory they are, and how much uncontrollable they are, how much they are beyond our capacity, beyond our level of possessing. So this actually helps us to understand these three characteristics. So therefore, you can continue your practice.
Bhante, there's someone who wants to ask the question directly. Do you have time?
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, just give me 1 second. I'll unmute them. Jayanti, you're free to talk.
Actually, this is her husband. Guru Swami Nansa, I have a small question from you. Yeah. It is not regarding meditation, but as a general question. I'm not young, I'm a bit old, and I'm about to retire one of these days. And I do meditation for quite a long time Swami Nansa. And my question is, when you start meditating and, you know, doing your work, there's a boredness that's coming in, the emptiness, right? So, I mean, it's not that I can't do meditation right along, you know, that how do I get rid of, how do I understand this boredness or the emptiness or the Lokaswami Nansa one day talked about the Nibbithava. So how do I handle that situation in a short note? Thank you, Bhante Butsarnai.
Basically, now, when you reach Nibbida, that is the dispassion or what you call as disenchantment, where we are, as you said, it is more like boredom, because your mind has no interest on anything. So in behavior wise, it is manifesting like that. On the other hand, during the meditation, so the mind doesn't want to look at even the bodily phenomena. Doesn't want to look at various feelings. And mind is not interested about looking at anything, but rather it likes to be alone. Just be. So, I mean, what we need to understand theoretically is our minds get agitated or our minds become thrilled when it is going through some defilements. Say you gain something, you like to see someone, you like to see something, and you like to see a music, and all these things actually agitate our mind. All these things stimulate our mind. So it is shifting towards the pleasure side. And on the other hand, we might go through various other side, painful feelings, and it shifts to the other side, the negative side. So continuously, we may are shifting from this to the other. So, but on the other hand, there is a quiet majority of time that we are spending in the equanimous side. So we don't want to know it. That is the problem. We are simply neglecting it. We feel bored, and then we want to jump back to the pleasure side. So we are, as I said in the previous question, we may be calling our friend, we may be watching TV, we may be playing cards, whatever it is, because we don't want to endure this boredom. Actually, what we need to understand is, through the practice, when things fade away, when various thoughts fade away, so ultimately, where the mind resides, where the mind stays, is on this equanimity. There is nothing much to do. So if you are trying to do something, it again agitates the mind. It again stimulates the mind. But now mind is in a kind of a restful situation. There is no up and down. Even if it is up and down, it is less. You are in a kind of in the middle regions, very much like in the baseline. Not in the up or in the down, or not in the positive or in the negative, but very much in the middle. But unfortunately, we interpret it like a boredom. But mind is resting. So we are not used to rest our mind. We have the syndrome of doing something. Nowadays, now we are in the 21st century, we always want to do something. I hope you understand, we always want to do. I want to do that. I want to do this. I want to read a book. I want to write a book. I want to tell something. I want to write, see it. I want to do it. So likewise, we always want to do. But we are coming through the meditation, we are coming to a region where we have to learn how not to do. Just be. So that is where we are actually plunge into this nibbida, viraga, where the mind is in a rest, without doing anything, without making any fabrication, without making any story, without creating any story. It is in a rest, a stillness. So this is something we need to learn in a way. But this is in a way the natural state of mind. So we actually have gone various picnics and various traveling, tourism and all these things. Now we don't want to come back home. That's the problem. And we feel the home like overseas. We feel the home like alien. We feel our home like strange. But the home, coming back home, is more like a natural sort of water-like, simple, direct type of experience. So more and more we dwell in this experience, more and more we dwell in this boredom, we dwell in this just be, then we can actually appreciate it. So don't worry, slowly, slowly you develop it. Suppose you can endure it for five minutes today. Next day you just be there for 10 minutes. Next day you be there for 15 minutes. Next day, you be there for 20 minutes. Likewise, you allow yourself to rest, not doing anything. Then your mind get on to a different paradigm. The mind will understand the value of it. It is not you understand the value of it theoretically, superficially, but rather the mind will understand the value of it. Then there won't be any trouble.
I don't think there's any further questions, so I'll pass to Arunaya for conclusion.
Thank you, Chatumali. I think, coming to the end of today's session, we had a very good session, I think. Bhante had Thank you very much, Bhante, for revealing all this invaluable Dhamma for all of us. It's really really beneficial to all the participants, I think. And so today we did a meditation session and we were listening to valuable Dhamma. So the merits that we all gain, we would like to dedicate to Bhante, and we wish all the good health and long life for you, and may you attain Nibbana. So thank you very much for all the participants for participating today's session. I think the participation is really good now. It's really encouraging to see all you are getting all the benefits from this session. So thank you very much, and I would like to say Theruvan Saranai to all of you.
Okay, Theruvan Saranai.